Does anybody here know what resurrection is? You are bolder than the assembly of children that received that question from the pastor of their small church. It's a story that happened some time ago where the pastor of a small church asked that question, does anybody know what resurrection is? And asked it to the children, and there was great silence, and there was rustling and fidgeting and unrest and silence. And the minister waited for a few seconds. And then finally, sheepishly, one little boy raised his hand. And he said, after hesitating for a little bit, all I know is that if your resurrection lasts for more than 6 hours, you're supposed to call your doctor. I say that because it's important to start this sermon with the understanding that resurrection can be a very confusing concept. And Easter can be a very confusing holiday. Perhaps you've noticed. Perhaps, like others, you felt some confusion at the mixed messages of dressing up little children in their finest clothes and then sending them out to the bushes to find eggs. Or wondering about the juxtaposition of singing Hallelujah and Gloria to commemorate the brutal trials of a man condemned to death. Or scratched your head thinking about the connection between the fertility of eggs and the finality of the tomb. Wondering about the difference between recreation, recreation, and resurrection. Is Easter the story of the glory of life or the story of the brutality of it? This question reminds me of an old skit from Saturday Night Live where Dan Aykroyd comes out with a mop and a can of new shimmer, saying that it's the best floor wax he's ever used. And beside them emerges Gilda Radner, who argues and corrects him by saying that new shimmer is not a floor wax, it's a dessert topping. And they begin to fight with one another until Chevy Chase comes out and corrects them and says, now, kids, new shimmer is a floor wax and a dessert topping. And then comes the tagline, new shimmer, the best shine you ever tasted. Sometimes, like you, I struggle with Easter because every year when I prepare my Easter sermon, I wonder, should I say it's a holiday that saves us from our sins or promises fertility? Or is it both? I think we do need to answer some of these questions. If not for our own satisfaction, then to wrestle ownership of this holiday away from the two best marketing agencies the world has ever known, the Hallmark Company and organized religion. Because if Easter is really ever going to be about hope and transformation, we have to pull it from the white-knuckled grip of people determined to make a profit on distorted images and stories that leave everyone confused and bereft of relevance or understanding. One great example is an article that I read several years ago that came from the Village Voice that was entitled Bunny Busters. And what caught my attention was the picture. And the picture showed the Easter Bunny getting arrested by New York City policemen. The article was about Amy Hamilton Thiebert, mother from Queens, who was protesting the sale of Easter baskets from her local Kmart. Why? Well, the answer could be gleaned from reading the sign that she was holding up when the photograph was taken of her being arrested, and it read, "Someone's in my Easter basket, and it's G.I. Joe." Thiebert was alarmed that the store was selling Easter baskets that had replaced the traditional chocolate bunnies with toys that included plastic soldiers armed with machine guns and rifles and grenades and knives. Kmart caught Thiebert distributing plastic eggs to children. And when they opened those eggs up, there was a piece of paper with a question printed on it reading, "Don't you think it's strange to have guns and soldiers in your Easter basket?" It turns out that Thiebert was part of two larger organizations calling themselves the Easter Bunny Liberation Organization and Friends of Chocolate Bunnies. And the Village Voice had a follow-up article entitled Full Metal Bonnet, where Kmart spokesperson Abigail Jacobs went on the defensive, saying this: "There was no intention on our part to offer up a violent Easter basket. We're very conscious of what will and what will not offend our customers. It was meant to be a lighthearted and fun gift. They, in my opinion, are harmless toys included in an Easter basket." But the article in the Village Voice also mentioned that the arresting officers, when asked, did not think that proliferation of toy guns is harmless. And it quoted Episcopalian Bishop George Packard, who was then head of chaplaincy for the armed forces, saying that the baskets were way over the edge and in very bad taste. Now, it may be a tempting strategy for us when taking our own Easter exam, when trying to respond when asked what Easter really means, to simply leave the question blank. After all, many Unitarian Universalists have worked from the premise that no answer is the answer. But there is a problem with that. Without people willing to examine their conscience and explain what Easter can be, we have to settle for what Easter has been. As long as we show we don't care, opportunistic people everywhere will slip whatever they want into our Easter baskets, including a way to celebrate war and violence. Because after all, there are many who would say that the church has for years been celebrating a message of violence within the message of Easter. It's important for anyone taking the Easter exam to know a little bit about church history. So let me share with you some of the things that the Roman Empire and the Jewish authorities placed in the very first Easter basket. In the time of Jesus' life, anyone who challenged authority, even challenged corrupt authority, were not tolerated. Crucifixion was the accepted punishment for treason. Jesus had spent 3 years teaching far and wide that status and heritage and the laws of men and even gender were unimportant to God and life in the kingdom to come. He had comforted the afflicted, but he had also afflicted the comfortable, challenging all the inequities that gave Rome and the early Jewish authorities all their power. Their choice was simple. They could collaborate to capture and torture and kill and make an example of this upstart, which all occurred in that time with great regularity. Or they could let his ideas be heard and possibly influence others. They colluded to kill him. Those were the ingredients for the first Easter basket. Of course, something completely different came from the event which neither the Romans or the Jewish authorities had counted upon. And the way I like to explain it is this, that Jesus was a human being who was killed and stuffed into a tomb. And on the third day, what arose was not the man, but rather an entire community that was dedicated to love and justice. But the earliest marketing departments, i.e. theologians who passed this story on to us, chose to spin it a completely different way. The second century theologian Irenaeus offered a theory of atonement claiming that because God and Satan were at odds and because humanity was born inherently sinful, God sent his son Jesus as a ransom payment needed for God to reclaim humankind from the devil. In the 11th century, theologian Anselm of Canterbury used this ransom theory to recruit soldiers for the Crusades. And not only did he promise that recruits could keep all the personal spoils that they gathered from the Crusades, a tempting offer considering the multitude of people who were starving as peasants and slaves, but they were also promised that if they happened to die in battle, that not only would they receive eternal salvation, but their entire family would as well. For they would be replicating the sacrifice that Jesus had made for humanity. Thankfully, this theology did not go unquestioned. A generation after Anselm, the theologian Abelard asked this important question. He asked, "Who will forgive God? Who will forgive God," he asked, "for the sin of killing his own child? How cruel and wicked it seems that anyone should demand the blood of an innocent person as the price for anything, or that it should be in any way pleasing that an innocent man should be slain. Still less that God should consider the death of his son so agreeable that by it he should be reconciled with the entire world." The debate, of course, raged on, and one of the best known responses to the violence within that theology was from Universalist minister Hosea Ballou. In his landmark Treatise on Atonement, Ballou said this: "The belief that the great Jehovah was offended with his creatures to the degree that nothing but the death of Christ or the endless misery of mankind could appease his anger is the idea that has done more injury to the Christian religion than the writings of all its oppressors for many centuries. The error has been fatal to the life and spirit of religion in our world. All those principles which are to be contemptuous by men have been believed to exist within God, and those who profess this injurious doctrine have been prompted toward that image and become even more cruel in their nature." End quote. Ballou went on to say that a loving God with whom we should seek atonement could never condemn any of his children by design or be responsible for the violence which brought about their suffering. A myriad of Unitarian ministers also challenged the notion of Jesus' divinity as well, and they stated that it was impossible and unthinkable that God would send his son as ransom, that human depravity is a form of self-hatred, and Jesus' life was the perfect example, not of how to seek atonement with violence, but how to seek an atonement because of violence. For violence creates a greater need for atonement, not a greater path for it. One of the things that has confounded Unitarians and Universalists the most over the centuries is why our culture continues to insist on the justification of violence as part of the Great Easter Basket. It is still widely accepted in most Easter services that atonement with God is only possible for those who believe that Jesus died for us, that his crucifixion and suffering were necessary and ordained, that he suffered compliantly. The implication being that our willingness to accept suffering in our lives makes us virtuous like Jesus. And if this is so, what kind of message does this offer the victims of domestic and sexual violence and abuse? That silent sacrificial suffering pleases God? Such reasoning and such theology is heartless and unacceptable. Unitarian Universalists have stood against this bad theology for centuries because it hurts people and it condones violence as a means of God's love. if we are to take ourselves seriously as religious reformers, as people who stand up to religion when it becomes coercive and divisive, we need to be able to offer a better understanding of what Easter is and what it's used for. We need to be able to explain Easter in terms of love and hope. We need to be able to pass the Easter exam of our lives. So, here it is. Now that you're prepared, your very own Easter exam. Are you ready? Pencils up. Here's your question. While waiting in the hospital for a friend to return from tests, you see an elderly man waiting on a bench at the end of the hallway alone. He is crying. You go to him. You introduce yourself. You sit and you listen to his story. He tells you that he has AIDS. He tells you his tale, which is about betrayal and judgment, abandonment, rejection, isolation, loneliness, fear, and despair. He finishes, and then he looks down into his lap and he begins to cry and sob. You reach for a tissue and you hand it to him, and you let him cry for a few more minutes, and you put your hand on his shoulder. After a while, he stops, and then he raises his head and he looks you right in the eye and he asks you in a soft voice, "Does God love me?" That is your Easter exam. What do you say? If Unitarian Universalism states that all life has inherent worth and dignity, how do you respond? If we believe that atonement is found by love rather than violence, what is your answer? If we believe that God or the power of love is real in this world and comes without ransom, that Easter is more than eggs in a basket but a way to help the suffering find their way back to hope, how will you pass this test in this moment? The answer is, you already passed this test when you saw him crying and you went over to him. You already understood what Easter was really all about when you handed him a tissue and you sat with him while he cried. You already gave him a way out of his suffering by giving him your hand and listening to his story, and you already became a minister of your faith and an answer to this Easter question by being able to be present for his suffering without being consumed by it. For in this you showed him that love can live through hate, that hope will not be consumed by fear, and that the world will not turn away from the brokenness of its people. But if you still feel compelled to say something more, remember that in your response, that it does not matter whether or not you yourself believe in God, or whether or not you believe in the sacrifice, whether or not you believe in the resurrection. The power of atonement and the Easter message is larger than the small minds that have carried it forward. The power of the message is a faith in love as the salvific power of all life. So if you want to say something more, if you hear his question and you need to respond, then say yes. If what you mean by God's love is to know that you are not alone, then yes. If what you hope for is to know that there are people who will understand and who will care about you and listen to you, then yes. If what you seek to believe is to know whether the love you seek is stronger than the fear and betrayal that you have been shown, then yes. And if what you want to know is whether this kind of love exists the world over and you are part of it, then yes. This is the Easter exam that needs passing and needs passing on, because it is the only kind of resurrection that lasts longer than 6 hours, which is a good thing. For we live in a world with even more violence and betrayal and abandonment than was part of the original Easter 2,000 years ago. And if the Easter message is to have any meaning, it requires us to pass this test, not just every spring, but every single day. For Easter, when we get down to it, is not a floor wax or a dessert topping. It's not guns in a basket. It's not bunnies hiding eggs. And it's not a violent ransom. When all is said and done, Easter is us. Us living in a hard and hurting world, showing that love is possible over and over and over, to the glory of life, and happy Easter.